Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
I always like to find out where people are from. That's kind of my thing. Like, you know, where you're from, who you are, where you came from. It kind of tells me a little bit something about you. And, you know, now with AI, I tend to use Grok a lot. I use that. I don't even use Google anymore. I go to Grok. It's right on my phone. And Grok is on X. People that are not familiar with that or formerly Twitter, I use Grok. And it was funny. For today's show, and I do listen to the Kale and Company show, I wanted to look up Nick. I was trying to figure out where he was from originally. So when I put in broadcaster Philadelphia, Nick Kale, his bio or whatever, it shows up on Grok and it says, oh, Nick Kale is a wrestler from Bergen Catholic, and he wrestled at Princeton and he graduated in 2023. And I'm like, no. The broadcaster I'm talking, this is what I typed. No, the Philadelphia broadcaster, not a wrestler. And Grok comes back and starts arguing with me and says a wrestler can be a broadcaster. So I guess the moral, but anyway, finally, from what I understand, when I did go back and forth with AI, that's actually what makes it kind of cool. Like, they can misinterpret what you want. It can take you down a different road. And the next thing you know, I'm arguing about, you know, where Nick Kale is from. And he's not a guy that graduated college in 2024 and wrestled at Princeton. So anyway, I did figure out that Nick is from the Philadelphia area. I believe he went to Temple. Hey, Jimmy, is that correct?
Yes, he went to Temple. He graduated in 2006.
Yeah. So anyway, Grok finally got it straight, but sometimes you got to dig in a little bit. So that's my little plug for Grok. I'm really loving AI, and you don't really need to use the Google. They give you all the ads. You go on Grok or you go to ChatGPT. You're going to get your answers a lot quicker. So this is Memorial Day. It's not Veterans Day, and you know that's a big difference. Memorial Day is for the soldiers who never came home. Veterans Day is for everybody that served in the military. So this is a very important day. And I always like to, I'll give you a little background on it. Like, when did Memorial Day come into existence? Well, it came into existence in 1868, soon after the Civil War. And they called it Decoration Day. And what people did a few years after the Civil War, say at the ending of 1865, around 1868, people went out to all these graves and they decorated them with flowers, flags, tributes, and they put them on the soldiers' graves. And there were a lot of graves, the ones that could be found. But people would probably, if their son did not come back from that war, they probably built a gravesite with them with no one in it just to memorialize the person. But this was an interesting fact about the Civil War. We lost 700,000 men. 700,000 men. Back then, women weren't in combat. I'm sure some were casualties of that war, too. And there was only 31 million people in the country. And you had 700,000 dead. To give you a little perspective on that, in World War II, we had 405,000 that were killed. And there were 131 million. So you got almost 300,000 less, but you have almost four times the population. So when you think of Memorial Day coming out of the Civil War, because the impact on the population of losing that many men, that many soldiers in the country, obviously the numbers are big because we were fighting each other. So, you know, they were killing Americans on both sides. But that gives you a little bit of background on, you know, how this all originated. And Memorial Day for me, you know, as I got older, it became more important to me. My dad was a World War II veteran, went in the war at 17. He was in the U.S. Navy. He ended up in Europe. But every year when he got a little bit older, he got very involved with the American Legion. And he would march every year in this little town called Creskill, New Jersey, which was right next to the town I grew up with, Dumont. This is North Jersey. So now you're all thinking, what's this North Jersey guy doing in our studio? But I want to tell you, I came to Philadelphia in 1987 as a young guy looking to start a business. And I haven't left. I'm still here, and I raised the family. So I've become pretty Philly. I lived in Center City on and off for about 10 years, just to give you a little background. But getting back to Memorial Day, getting back to my dad, every year he would march in this parade. And by the time he was in his late 60s, he went blind, so my brother would hold him by his arm, and they would go down this hill for about a mile. And you know what I remember, too? When my daughter became about five, she'd hold his hand and go with him. But what I found very interesting, and at this Memorial Day celebration with all these, you know, men and women that had served, you know, marching in this parade. At the end of the parade, there was a mayor. His name was Ben Romeo of Creskill, New Jersey. And he would come out and give a detailed speech about someone in this small town who went off to World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, some of the recent wars over in Afghanistan and Iraq. I don't remember hearing any about that. It's such a small town, but these bigger, larger wars, he would take one person from that town and give you a detailed biography, like where the kid went to school, who he hung out with, where he worked in town. And you'd be sitting in the center of town as he'd be memorializing this soldier that left that town one day. And who knows, in Belgium, in France, in Germany, he would never come back to that town. He would die. But the detail that, and the research that this mayor did, it really inspired. It was very inspiring to hear these stories, and it made you really consciously say, this is what Memorial Day is about. And it's definitely about hamburgers, hot dogs, and getting to the beach, and you're probably headed down the shore today. But it really is a solemn day for those young men and now young women who go off to these foreign places, and they fight these wars on the behalf of our country and don't come back. Right or wrong wars, they still go out there and do it, and some of them don't come home. And, you know, I always had a thought when I was a little kid in my house, my mom and dad bought the home from a very older woman. And my mom would always say, her name was Mrs. Lennox. And she would say, oh, she lost her boy in World War II. He didn't come home. And when you're a little kid and you hear that, it's kind of like, oh, war, and, you know, you start playing guns in the backyard or whatever. But I'd always heard my mother mention that. And when I got older and I would go to this Memorial Day thing with my dad to do the parade, I would say to I would come back to the house to stay, the house I grew up in. And at those points, I'm talking like I'm a dad now and I'm in my 30s, and I would start thinking about that kid in the house that grew up in the same house as me, that I'm sure wherever he was over in Europe or in the South Pacific, he was thinking about getting back to his home that day. So that's another little thing that touches me on Memorial Day, is thinking of those things. If you get a chance too, you know, try to get to one of those local celebrations. They look kind of boring, but they do the 21-gun salute. But if you go there and, you know, you start getting that feeling like, okay, this is what it's all about. And so anyway, it's Memorial Day. If you're heading down the shore, if you got something good going on today, you want to share that with me or the audience, I encourage you to call in at 855-839-1210. You know what I'm going to cover? The next thing I'm going to cover, you know, we go from Memorial Day, we're going to jump into something. We're going to jump into the auto pen. The Biden auto pen. I know it's a big story out there, and I think a lot of people on the right, a lot of people in the MAGA movement, they're hoping that something comes out of this. So for those who are not following the auto pen story, I'll give you a brief update. It's the auto pen. There's Trump, the Trump administration, Trump himself, and a lot of people on the right are saying that Biden was so out of it that his aides were signing legal binding documents that Joe Biden had no idea they were signing. And these things were being put into law. This is where the pardons and the commutations, they're saying all of this stuff that went down, Joe Biden was so cognitively impaired that he had no clue what these people were doing. And that relates to people saying, like, he wasn't really running the White House at all anyway, so why wouldn't they be using this auto pen to sign things that Biden had no intent of signing, or he wasn't even capable of signing. I'm not out there on that limb, but I'm going to kind of, let's all kind of break it down today. And I'm sure some of the listeners out here are very familiar with this story, and they're going to have a different opinion, or they're going to have the same opinion. But let me get through a little of this. And then if you think I'm off the target, I really want to hear from you. So then I think Trump is using this auto pen thing as, I think he knows it's a long shot that you're ever going to get any type of conviction or you're going to overturn it. I think he knows it's a long shot. I think he did think Biden was kind of out of it, but I don't think he thought he was so incapacitated. He didn't know or wasn't giving orders on what to sign or agreeing to what to sign. So here's how it works. It's good politics for Trump to keep saying that, you know, Joe is so out of it, and the aides were telling the auto pen what to sign. And that's good politics because Trump wants to keep reminding everybody of how bad it was in the last administration. And it was bad. Open borders, crime, drugs, wasteful spending, the green scam, inflation, the Ukraine nightmare, which I might want to circle back on because I think that's a thorn in Trump's side, that Ukraine war, because he's going to have to clean it up. And cleaning up someone else's mess is never easy. So I think, you know, Trump, you know, now going after the auto pen and Joe, it's really to say, like, these people were so bad and quite frankly, so despicable how they managed the country. They were capable of this. Proving they did it and getting some stuff overturned, like Trump wants the pardons overturned, it's going to be very difficult. But I think he's just always trying to remind you, like, that what they did, you saw it, you witnessed it with your own eyes, you lived it here as an American, that he just likes keeps telling you, if they didn't do it, in the back of his mind, they were quite capable of doing it. So let me give you a history of the auto pen. The modern auto pen actually goes back to Truman. It goes back to President Truman. So it's not something that was just, you know, came about in the last 4 years. They've been using this auto pen for a while. Matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson had an invention called the polygraph. I don't think he invented it, but they invented it for him. Someone developed it. They would hook something to Jefferson's hand back in the 1700s, and he became president in 1800. So in 1800, he had this thing where he had a contraption to his hand that when he would write a letter or sign it, it was attached to another pen mimicking his exact signature. So it was two times efficient. Like, he had doubled his efficiency, by 100%. He increased it. And I thought that was an interesting thing. The auto pen, in a weird way, goes back to President Thomas Jefferson in the 1800s. Now, I'm going to try to picture this again. They have these kind of straps, contraption on his hand. So when he's writing a letter or signing thing, and they did a lot of things by letter, there's one being written right next to him. And it actually, like, historically, would match his signature almost perfectly. But they called it a polygraph, and you could understand why, it moving up and down. And then we have the modern polygraph that we give people to see if they're lying. So that's really the start of the auto pen. The modern auto pen came in with Truman. Now, there's a group called the Oversight Project. And according to the Oversight Project, and they are definitely a right leaning think tank, they went through, and I guess they, you know, every document that they're able to get, because it's all public record, all of Biden's signed documents were with the auto pen. Everyone. I think that's every document he ever signed as president was using this auto pen. There was only one time he did not use the auto pen, and that was when he wrote the letter about dropping out of the race. That's the only time he actually put his hand, ink to paper, on the letter. That's the only time in his presidency. And so the that auto pen was being heavily used by Joe Biden. The first time I saw the auto pen was I was actually an intern for a Democrat back in college. I interned for Senator Bill Bradley. What they call him? Dollar Bill. He was a great basketball player for the New York Knicks. But that's the first time I ever saw the auto pen, and that's back in the 1980s. So this auto pen's been around for a long time, a very long time. So the now we're going to get into the legality of the auto pen. So in George W. Bush, in his administration, I guess there had to be, maybe there were conversations coming up about how this auto pen was being used. But the DOJ at the time, the legal counsel, counsel for George Bush in 2005, put out an opinion that staff could use the auto pen on the behalf of the president to sign legally binding agreements. Okay, so this is really important if this thing proceeds with Joe Biden, because it's going to go back to precedent and it's going to go back to some of the rulings and some of the laws that have come up in the last couple of decades. So the legal counsel for Bush puts out an opinion that says the staff can use an auto pen for the president's signature, but this is key. And remember this: if it has legs, the key is the president must make the decision to sign. He has to have the intent to sign. Now, because Biden seemed so mentally incapacitated, that who know, did he really make the decision and did he really have the intent? That's kind of the issue being raised by Donald Trump and the administration and a lot of people on the right who believe that, you know, these things were just getting signed. President Biden had no clue. But it's that this opinion that was put out by the Bush people, the DOJ, I think it was the Department of Justice and his legal counsel within the Justice. Once they put that out, both Obama and the Biden administrations accepted it fully. They started using this auto pen all the time. So that's a very important thing. Now, what's interesting, in Trump's first term, he never used it. They're trying to, you know, there's people now kind of trying to dig it up so they can do a gotcha with Trump. But Trump would only use it for a correspondence, you know, with the American people, if he was writing a general letter, if he was sending out a memorandum, but he never did it. So far, they haven't found anything where he signed it in his first administration, which was a binding legal agreement. I don't think they have anything on him. And as a matter of fact, when I look at the clock right now, and we're coming back to this auto pen, I got a lot more to say on it, but I think Jimmy wants to take me to commercial. So I think we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and on the free Odyssey app.
Before we went to the break, we're talking about the auto pen. Joe Biden, that his aides and the people who were surrounding him were signing documents that he had no intent to sign. That's kind of the case they're trying to make. I think it's a difficult case. Not that it's not possible. Anything was possible with what the Democrats were up to. So I left it off that in around 2005, if this keeps going, it's going to get very legal. So in 2005, the Bush administration, his Department of Justice put out a legal letter saying that aides could use a auto pen to sign any legal binding agreements on the president's behalf. The most important thing is that the president wanted it signed, that he had the intent was that he, you know, he was saying, yeah, get this document, bring it over to the auto pen and sign it. The question that people are asking, did Biden even ask for some of these things to be signed? And his aides and staff just went out and used the auto pen to sign them. And Trump is focused in on the pardons and commutations that he made. So then what I was saying is after that, Obama, He used the auto pen all the time, as did George W. Bush. Biden used the auto pen, but in the Trump first administration, they haven't found any legally binding document that Donald Trump actually used the auto pen for. And I'm going to tell you, that is a very, and this is a compliment to Trump. Everyone I just named, the other presidents, none of them were really ever in a business executive position. So that's a business instinct about Trump, not letting anyone use the auto pen to sign legally binding documents. Because, hey, if you're not paying attention, maybe someone would start throwing things you had no intent of signing through that auto pen. But it's why it's a business instinct. In a lot of businesses, you set up checks and balances, for example, like the checkbook. Like a check could not, the controller could not write a check to pay a vendor. And believe me, you ever issued tons of payments unless it was signed off. If it was under $10,000, and I'm talking about all small, medium sized businesses. Turn. But anyway, I think we're going to break right now. We got a commercial coming up, so I'm going to turn it over to Jimmy.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
With Biden on that tape with the federal prosecutor, who came out and basically just said, if I brought a case against him, it's something like he was I don't have the exact words, but he's like a genteel old man with a very bad memory. I probably couldn't get a conviction. And that, you know, that's probably true, because it would have been in Washington, D.C. You would have had a tough time getting a Democrat convicted like Biden in D.C. Probably wasn't going to happen anyway. And, you know, prosecutors do make decisions, financial decisions. How much is the case going to cost? And I'm not just saying, I'm saying with any case. And what's the likelihood of winning? You know, they can't just, you know, they want to take cases that they think they have a case to win. And he probably said, you know, besides this guy being an old guy who can't remember anything, the chances of me getting a prosecution and wasting all this money, time, and energy, it's not worth it. But one thing people should realize that during Herr's when he was doing that interview, and you heard some of the tapes of that interview where Joe sounds distorted, he starts rambling on and going into a different direction. Some of that was intentional. The deposition, what you want to do is try to talk about anything else but the case so you don't get tripped up with perjury or whatever. And that's why I'm never a big believer that Joe Biden was totally out of his mind and totally incapacitated. I think he was stalling the federal prosecutor, Herr, and just trying to get off subject as much as often, that it was a strategy. A lot of people were saying he declined cognitively. There's no doubt about that, but he's old, but everyone running around that he had Alzheimer's and, you know, he was going to collapse tomorrow. If you were that sick, you can't function. You're not going out. He was just on The View a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it wasn't good. It's not like there's a lot of clarity to what he says, but there never was. He was never that bright. He was never a good speaker. He's not an intellect. He nearly got thrown out of law school for plagiarizing. Never mind plagiarizing. He's not an intellect, but he is a street smart guy, and he knew how to make government work for himself. He got into office at the age of 29 or 30. They swore him in as a U.S. senator. So what he learned to do was navigate Washington, D.C., and he did a lot of backslap. And he wasn't an intellectual at any level. But I think in that interview with Herr, he was stalling and being as deceptive as possible. And, you know, some of it's organic to him, because he is kind of dopey in a way. They used to say when Obama made him his vice president, Obama always tried to be good to Joe, like bring him in on certain meetings. He liked having him there because Joe was such a good backslapper. He would go back to the U.S. Senate where Biden, you know, not Biden, Obama was only there long enough to have a cup of coffee. And then he became president. So he needed Joe. That's why he picked him. He needed Joe to go back to the U.S. Senate with all his buddies, because it is a giant country club, regardless if you're a Republican or Democrat. They're more hostile to each other now. But when Joe came up, we had tons of friends. It was all, you know, it was one big country club down there. And that's what Obama needed him for. But I've read something that during some of the really intense, important meetings during the Obama administration, Obama would do this thing where he'd like to engage Joe for a short time to give his opinion and then kind of get back to work and really start talking, you know, nuts and bolts about how to fix things. And he would throw things over to Biden, and Biden would just start going off on some, you know, when back in 1950, whatever, he'd just start going off the rails about something, telling a funny story. And they said Obama had a good way of kind of bringing him back to get whatever answer he needed to get out of him and then move on quickly to get away from Joe. So I think there were two things with Joe. I don't think his brain was totally melting. I just think, you know, as Trump always said, he was low IQ and he is old. I mean, that's an old president. I think he's 81 now. But there's some people in their 80s. Look at Trump, man. That guy's full of energy. And there's other people you'll meet at the gym or in their 80s or on a golf course, and they're sharp as a tack. But Joe's never been that sharp as a tack. But the bigger thing was, with her, he was being deceptive. Another thing is, there's no doubt that these illegal documents, Joe had them all over the place. He had them in Delaware. He had them in a warehouse in New York. Then he had them in China. Then he had some person in his office driving them around someplace. They had him by the car. But the argument that what I didn't understand about her was, it's not, they know where the documents were. They had pictures of them. So they know he had classified information when he shouldn't have had it. But what frustrates me is what I never heard from the prosecution, not if he had the documents. We know he had the classified documents. The question is, how was he using the classified documents? No one ever really was bringing that up during you know, when they've been playing those tapes the last few days. I'm like, yeah, of course we knew he had the documents, and you could have prosecuted them. You could have taken them to court over that in a minute. The real thing, what we wanted out of that, which we never got, is how were those documents used? Was that part of the deal that with allegedly that he was doing with Hunter? Some of those documents needed to be shared with other governments or countries to prove that you're worth something. Like when you're selling access, is like, oh, you just get to talk to Joe, but you're going to want something for it. And sometimes people will ask, like, I need to see this. I need to know this is. This is what I'm paying for. But we never got that from her, which was a little frustrating to me. But, you know, at this point, Biden is over. And, sometimes it's not even worth going back. So that's my little thing on Joe Biden and that prosecution that never occurred, because we're hearing for years that, you know, we got him now. We're going to get him. He's finished. He's on the ropes. We're going to take him out. So I'm going to move off of that. I'm going to I'm just reading a headline here about some giant record drone assault on Ukraine, and Russia is pulling up a lot more troops. I also heard something that they sent drones after Putin's helicopter. Ukraine sent drones after Putin's helicopter. Now I'm hearing that there's a giant assault that might occur with Russia sending in tons of drones against Ukraine. And I get back to my other point from before. This cleaning up this mess for Donald Trump, this could be like the thorn in his side. And it's an important thing that can kind of hurt all the other things that Trump wants to Trump wants to do. Maybe he can walk away. I don't know. I don't know. Can America, we've never done that before where we just completely just say to the Europeans, okay, guys, this is all yours. But if it keeps going bad, it can come back to hurt Trump and his policies and what he's going to try to do. So once again, I am worried about this Ukraine thing. Let's go to break, and we'll be back in a few.
Start your day with Kale and Company, weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.